Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 21. What's the cheesiest detective show you've ever seen? Fun fact, my dad was once on the show, Columbo. You're probably thinking to yourself, Clum who? But no joke, it was a good detective show. The cheesiest detective show I've ever seen starred Jessica Lansbury, you know, the voice of Miss Potts on Beauty and the Beast. She was in a show called Murder, She Wrote. Of course, small little town of Cabot Cove was so small that if there were that many murders in it, you'd have to think it was her. That's why in my house, we call that show Murder, She Did, not Murder, She Wrote. Nevertheless, the beginning of Deuteronomy chapter 21 reads like a detective show. Verse 1 says, "If in the land that the Lord your God has given you to possess, someone is found slain, lying in the open country, and it is not known who killed him, then your elders and your judges shall come out, and they shall measure the distance to the surrounding cities. And the elder of the city that is nearest to the slain man shall take a heifer that has never been worked and has not pulled any yoke. And the elders of that city shall bring the heifer down to a valley with running water, which is neither plowed nor sown, and shall break the heifer's neck there in the valley." Again, we come back to the theme of atonement. In this whodunit mystery, we don't exactly know who the murderer is. Therefore, this is an atoned-for murder. In other words, we're getting the idea that somebody has to pay for the shedding of innocent blood. If there's an unsolved murder, you measure the body to the nearest town and contact the elders and priests from that village to determine jurisdiction. If no murder is found and justice can't be meted out to the culprit, the priest would take a heifer and break its neck in a valley. Then they would have the elders wash their hands over the cow, saying, "Our hands did not shed this blood, nor did our eyes see it done." Verse 7. This is because although nobody could be found and punished, God would require the blood at somebody's hand. This ceremony was more to absolve the guilt of everybody there and allow for people to move on, trusting God to reward with swift justice. And here's a comforting thought. When you believe in God, even if it seems like somebody gets away with something, justice is always met, and you can have that confidence, either in this life or the next. If you believe in the afterlife, then you also believe that nobody ever gets away with anything. Today, DNA tests are proving people guilty of crimes that they were convinced they'd gotten off scot-free for decades ago. But the evidence will always stand before the judge in eternity. And let that be a lesson for everyone out there who's thinking of doing something really naughty. Okay, let's move on. If the beginning of this chapter resembles a detective show, the rest of it resembles a horror film. Verses 10 through 14 read, "When you go out to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God gives them into your hand, and you take them captive, and you see among the captives a beautiful woman, and you desire to take her to be your wife, and you bring her home to your house, she shall shave her head and pare her nails. And she shall take off the clothes in which she was captured, and shall remain in your house, and lament her father and her mother a full month. After that you may go and be her husband, and she will be your wife. But if you no longer delight in her, you shall let her go where she wants. But you shall not sell her for money, nor shall you treat her as a slave, since you've humiliated her." At first, this passage looks like a try before you buy policy, but think about it. It's not. If they took a woman for war, she was a servant, but they couldn't sleep with her, not unless they were seriously considering marrying her. If they slept with her and didn't marry her, then they'd have to free her. Servants were extremely valuable. This was a deterrent. This was not an encouragement. Think about it. What if you could have a servant follow you around all day? What would you do? Have them clean your room, make your appointments, get your food, do your homework. That's not something you throw away lightly, just for one moment of pleasure. So the idea was, if you were going to advance on your servant sexually, then you needed to marry your servant. This was actually to protect the dignity of the servant and prevent them from being sexually abused by their masters. And trust me when I say this, this was not common or normal at all. This would have been the exception. In fact, this would have been probably the only place in the world where this was practiced at that time. Okay, so the next part is about a man with two wives. Wait, rewind the tape. Hold up. Wait a minute. What you talking about, Willis? So the problem arises when you've got two wives and you've got two groups of families that need to inherit. Because in those days, the firstborn child of every family inherited double the portion of the rest. Well, what happens when you have two wives? Not really a problem that we think about, but definitely a present reality for the Israelites. So if the firstborn receives most of the inheritance, he gets double what everyone else does. If you're not aware of it, this is still the case today in Middle Eastern countries. But with great power comes great responsibility. Did you actually know that the firstborn also took care of the parents when they became elderly? So it was kind of like weighing the pros and cons. Imagine this marriage proposal, the firstborn. Hey, baby, if you marry me, I get double of what my brothers get. You got to go with the winning horse, babe. You know what I mean? And it's this guy right here. You think she'd be like, hey, sign me up, Romeo, until he adds, which was a custom. Oh, yeah, but we got to live with my mom. That little nest egg was to take care, really, of the generation before you and the generation that you spawned. So it wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. By the way, neither is having two wives or two husbands. Just having one is more than a handful for most people. Moving on from the double trouble, we go to verses 18 through 21. Verse 18 reads, if a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father and the voice of his mother, and although they disciple him, will not listen to them, and his father and mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of this city, this is our son who is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Okay, I might have taken some liberty with calling him a greasy pig, but you get the point. Verse 21, then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones, so you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So here we have the right procedure of dealing with someone, a greasy pig of a son. In other words, it's time to make some bacon, sizzle, sizzle. Okay, that's morbid and a little bit inappropriate. But the parents here, their wits in, and the son is a drunkard, eats all their food, and doesn't contribute. Well, God says, we ain't having no freeloading drunkards hanging around here. Obviously, there's a deep-seated problem in this individual. I'm sure they've done everything they can possibly do. And of course, this is probably a very extreme case. I mean, your parents probably want to kill you on a daily basis, but they're not actually going to do it. They love you to death. But you have to wonder about parents that would be driven to this extreme. I mean, like I said, your parents probably want to kill you at times, but they wouldn't be driven to this extreme, would they? Would they? Lastly, verses 22 and 23 tell us why the Jews took Jesus' body down off the cross that night. Jewish law forbade them from allowing a body to stay overnight on a pole or a cross. Normally, criminals were kept out on a pole. They were put on display after they had been killed or executed. And here, God says, you're not allowed to leave them overnight. That's just gross. But maybe the Pharisees, who demanded that Jesus be taken down from the cross because they didn't want to violate anything from the book of Deuteronomy, probably should have followed that part of the law that also said, you shall not murder. Too soon? Read Deuteronomy chapter 21 today. And as you do, remember, obey your parents or else.
Join us next time as we continue the journey one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing and hearing through the word.